Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Filmmaker Astra Taylor wonders, just like the rest of us, how to live right and do right in this big, confusing world of ours. So, with camera rolling, she got some of today's top philosophers out of their ivory towers and into the streets to tell us what they know. Big thinkers out of their book-lined retreats and into backseats, crowded streets, garbage dumps, a rowboat into the noise and grime and truth of the real world. And then she asked them the big questions. This hour, On Point, Astra Taylor and her new film, Examined Life, getting down and dirty with today's philosophers. You can join the conversation. Do you live the examined life? Do we need our philosophers to climb down with us into the streets? And what would you ask a big thinker in the back seat? Joining me now from San Francisco is writer and documentary filmmaker Astra Taylor. Her new film is Examined Life, Philosophy in the Streets. Astra Taylor, thank you very much for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's good to have the tables turned once in a while.
Yeah, right. Be interviewed, Astra. And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is our own Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Ms. Taylor.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Astra, this film is a lot of fun, more than I expected. I mean, philosophers walking around and talking, who knew? There are many moments of, insight, humor? You're having a good time here. Was it something personal that got you to turn your camera on philosophers and take it to the streets? Why did you get up to this?
Well, certainly it's something people are pretty suspicious of often when I say, I made a film about philosophy. People go, are the philosophers dead? And,
right.
And how are you going to keep the audience from falling asleep? So sleep and death seem to be the immediate response to this material. But I tried to approach it with, a sense of curiosity and irreverence and humor, because I think that while philosophy is incredibly serious, there's also an enjoyment and a pleasure in thought and a pleasure to be found in the life of the mind.
And kind of overdue for us who don't in everyday life get a whole lot of it these days.
Yeah, it's not something that's that present in our mainstream culture, even though, we live in a country that was founded by very philosophical people. It certainly was a personal. This is an idiosyncratic project. It's not an objective portrait of philosophy today. That I don't know how long a film that would have to be. That would truly put the audience to sleep.
Right.
So it's definitely driven by my own, set of questions. Really, my longstanding interest in ethical issues, and these questions have been with me since I was a kid. I first read Peter Singer, who is one of the philosophers in the film, when I was 12 years old, and I was dealing with issues around animal rights, and I had just become a vegetarian, and I really was hungry to know more about this. So,
and here you are all these years later with him on the streets in New York and a lot of others as well. We're going to hear a lot of tape in this hour from the film, Astra. You've got, these are not all technically like schooled philosophers, though that is the role they all play. You've got Anthony Appiah here, Judith Butler, Michael Hart, Martha Nussbaum, Avital Ronell, Peter Singer, Cornel West, Slavoj Žižek. Your own sister, Sonora Taylor, makes a wonderful appearance here. Jack, I want to get you on this, but let's just dive in for a moment with one of these. Let's go. Here's Avital Ronell, if I'm pronouncing that right, teaches at NYU. Yep. You're in Tompkins Square Park for this interview. You explained to her, you're just getting the format going here, that she's going to have just 10 minutes to explain her ideas. And Ronell, who sounds eerily like a Woody Allen character, jokingly chafes at the idea.
Yes, that is scandalous. I can understand that the others would have 10 minutes, but to bring me down to 10 minutes is an outrage. There's no doubt about it. The thing is, we don't know where this film is going to land, whom it's going to shake up, wake up, or freak out, or bore. But even boredom as an offshoot of melancholy would interest me as a response to these dazzling utterances that we're producing.
I love Woody Allen. Hello. She's in the Park. We'll hear more from her throughout the film. You've got Cornel West, the kind of jazz master of philosophical talk in the backseat of a car in Manhattan. Of course, he's out of Princeton now. You asked him whether it takes a university degree to know how to philosophize. Lord, no, he says. No degrees, just courage.
Takes tremendous discipline, takes a tremendous courage to think for yourself, to examine yourself. That Socratic imperative of examining yourself requires courage. You know, William Butler Yeats used to say, it takes more courage to examine the dark corners of your own soul than it does for a soldier to fight on the battlefield. Courage to think critically. You can't talk. Courage is the enabling virtue for any philosopher, for any human being, I think, in the end. Courage to think, courage to love, courage to hope.
Courage to the battlefront. And, Jack, you hear all the traffic of Manhattan right there around Cornel West, and he's just the beginning of, almost 10 philosophers that Astra has here. What did you think of listening to all this, Jack?
Well, I enjoyed it a great deal, and I think it does fill a gap. I mean, the sense that philosophy is arcane, that it's not part of our lives, I think all of us have that. And as I was thinking about that, I don't know what you think about it, Astra, but it struck me that one reason is religion, that the space that used to, or at least one thinks used to, go to philosophizing and thinking about ultimate questions has been filled a lot in our time by religion, and especially by the pragmatic kind of religion, the sort of religion that says, I believe what I believe because it helps me get through my life. Well, there's no arguing with that. There's no entering into dialogue with that. It's almost religion as a form of therapy. And then I think a second reason is ideology. If someone says to me, I've got a philosophy, I feel that they're trying to that they're really more interested in power than truth, that they've got a system that they want to manipulate the world with, their philosophy, and that it makes one chary of the whole idea of philosophy. What do you think of those two points?
Astra?
Yeah, I think that you're bringing up some interesting issues. I think along with religion, you know, people who are truth seekers tend to also turn to science today. You know, if we want to know about the origins of the universe or why we're here, we might, you know, ask a physicist perhaps. And then you mentioned therapy. We also turn where we once might have turned to philosophy for consolation, we now turn to self-help or psychology. So there's a lot of competition in this day and age. But you also mentioned this issue of ideology. And so one thing I was trying to do with Examine Life by showing these different thinkers in different contexts and moving from one to the other, I wanted to reveal the fact that, philosophy doesn't just have to be a closed system. Well, this is my worldview and I'm not listening to anyone else. Rather, I was hoping to show that there's a sort of larger ethic of intellectual inquiry and curiosity and also listening, considering other people's points of view, and that this is something that's desperately needed right now.
Let's keep those philosophers talking. Here's, again, NYU's feminist deconstructionist philosopher Avital Ronell in New York. Here she's, you don't get this in every film these days, quoting French philosopher Jacques Derrida.
This is something that Derrida has taught. If you feel that you've acquitted yourself honorably, then you're not so ethical. If you have a good conscience, then you're kind of worthless. Like if you think, oh, I gave this homeless person $5, I'm great, then you're irresponsible. The responsible being is one who thinks they've never been responsible enough. They've never taken care enough of the other.
Jack, there's the problem with philosophers. They start bringing up those difficult ethical issues, right? If you feel good about yourself,
you shouldn't feel good.
You shouldn't. Forget it. And she, Astra, it was interesting. You asked the sort of obvious question for the philosopher, and I mean that generously here, but, you know, sort of about the search for meaning in life.
Yeah.
She says, no, just go for some angst. Angst will get you in the right frame of mind to be an aware modern person.
Yes, it's true. I mean, that was part of the reason I opened the film with her, though there's a brief, you know, appearance by Cornel West.
Mm-hmm.
He gives a general definition of philosophy. But yes, see, philosophy is associated with the search for meaning, the question, what's the meaning of life? So Avital sort of blows that right out of the water. She just says, no way.
Meaning.
Let's resist that. Yes, exactly.
In fact, she calls the search for meaning something like fascistoid or something. There were a number of words in here I hadn't heard before, but fascistoid is a new one to me.
Yes, and so she's quite suspicious of this whole enterprise. And I thought this is, you know, a sort of an edgy way to start this film. It moves into safer territory, but she does bring up, you know, in the clip you just played, a fundamental theme of Examine Life, which is, well, what are our responsibilities to others, especially in a globalized world? And this is a really big issue, and the philosophers present, you know, sometimes contradictory you know, opinions on what it is that we should be doing and how we can go about it.
And issues of ethics all over here. Here's a moment from conversation on Fifth Avenue in New York with Princeton's Peter Singer. He's a big ethicist. He was walking past Bergdorf Goodman here with a display of Dolce & Gabbana shoes and tons of people walking by with bulging shopping bags. Here he goes.
This is the center of one of the world's richest countries and one of the most expensive places there. And that raises an ethical issue. I mean, there are people who have the money to buy at these stores and who don't seem to see any kind of moral problem doing that. But what I want to ask is, well, shouldn't they see some sort of moral problem about that? Isn't there a question about what we should be spending our money on? And that's really one of the reasons why I think it's interesting to be here on Fifth Avenue talking about ethics.
Can't even go shopping, Jack, once you set the philosophers loose. They're out there, you know, badgering your shopping bags.
You're just not going to have any fun with these people whatsoever. It's a bad conscience all the time. And you know, I think as he talks and brings it out, he really brought home to me what is one of the most painful discoveries I think we all make, which is our effective indifference to suffering. I mean, it's, you know, we all work on it, and yet there it is. We are effectively indifferent to it. Mm-hmm. We shut it off. We don't respond to it. And here he's saying, look, get mobilized. Forget those shoes and give that money to Oxfam.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about a new film that catches philosophers on the hoof, on the street, in the backseat of a car, sharing their visions. It's by Astra Taylor, documentary filmmaker and writer. It's called Examined Life, currently playing in New York City and in San Francisco and, well, we hope headed around the country to you. What would be your big question for our big thinkers today? Cornel West in the backseat of a car that at least at points, Astra, you're driving, makes a number of appearances in Examined Life. And if you don't think you need philosophy, here he is. Think about the world. Think about our times. Here's Cornel West sort of driving home. Why we need it?
How do you generate an elegance of earned self-togetherness so that you have a stick-to-itness in the face of the catastrophic and the calamitous and the horrendous and the scandalous and the monstrous?
Woo, in the face of all that, an elegance of earned self-togetherness, that trumpeter can play, Astra, that Cornel West.
Yeah, and he his whole philosophy of he says that, you know, he's a jazz man in the world of ideas, and that sort of gave me license to, you know, play around with these different philosophers and their ideas and weave them together. So he was a muse in that way.
But that self-togetherness, it's not easy to hang on to in the face of all that. Jay's calling from Needham, Massachusetts. Jay, you're on the air with Astra Taylor. Hi, Jay.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You know, I was a undergrad philosophy major, unfortunately, many years ago now. But I think philosophy really is missing in our public square at the moment. A lot of people don't understand the difference between philosophy and religion and where, you know, the good things that philosophy can add to our society in terms of an understanding of social justice, democracy, and a better society. And I'll just leave you with that point.
Thanks very much, Jay, for calling. Jack, we had the Globe and Mail watch the film, and they said, yeah, you know, it made them think, what's happened here? We've got sort of all kinds of gurus who have taken the place. You mentioned religion and ideology, but you've got finance gurus and health gurus and relationship gurus. But all that falls a little bit short of dealing with the really, really big questions, Jack.
It does, and I like the focus on ethics throughout here and on how to live, and the larger questions really of political philosophy. I mean, isn't it interesting that this all the debates now about the Obama stimulus program and the Obama budget really come back to basic issues of philosophy? Is it fair to take money from the rich and give it to the people in the middle? isn't that taking money away from people who've earned it? And how are you justified in doing that? Or is it justified because it makes a better society for everyone? Or in other words, it's suddenly basic issues of justice, which had seemed off the boards, are in the public square, it seems to me.
Peter Singer was wonderful here on Fifth Avenue, and at times, I'm not sure where he hearkens from. It sounded a little bit like the Flight of the Conchords guys to me.
He's Australian.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But wonderful. But he's saying, you know, in part, you set him up in after Ronell. He says, yes, it's important for life to have meaning. And he says, the meaning is in making life better, which as a philosopher he takes seriously. But philosophers have paid for that. He reminds us Socrates was forced to drink hemlock back in the day when he was in the public square for corrupting the morals of youth. Or he was indicted for that after talking about ethics and not accepting the conventional ethics of the day, looking for something better, Astra.
Yes, and Peter also seems quite relieved that doesn't happen to philosophers today.
Right.
But at the same time, as we've been talking about, they seem they're noticeably absent from the public square, and, mm-hmm. and I think there are different reasons for this. Again, you know. There's not a space in our the mainstream media for philosophy, and that does stand in stark contrast to a country like France, where they have a long history of broadcasting philosophers.
But our philosophers have hardly made themselves media friendly. Cornel West aside,
exactly.
I mean, it's so technical and dense. Some of these writers put down on paper when they're not in front of your camera. Who could read it?
Exactly. And I think that the narrowing of philosophical language has no doubt contributed to this problem. And so my film is very much a challenge to philosophy and to these thinkers in particular, because I made it very clearly that my intention was to reach a broader audience and that they were to speak without jargon, to speak in plain English, and to speak in a way that would relate to people's real everyday experience.
Get them out in the world.
Get them out in the world and see if they can rise to that challenge, and I think they did, but also there are moments where it's difficult to translate these abstract, highly technical arguments into sort of regular everyday prose.
Well, let's hear them try to do it. Here's the British Ghanaian philosopher Kwame Anthony Appiah. He's thought a lot about how to be a citizen in a globalized world, how to be what he calls a cosmopolitan. You caught up with him at the Toronto International Airport, musing amid the escalators and baggage claim areas.
If you live a modern life, if you're traveling through an airport, you're going to be passing lots and lots of people, and within a few minutes, you'll have passed more people than most of our remote human ancestors would ever have seen in their entire lives. As an American, you exist in this kind of virtual relationship with 300 million people. If you're lucky enough to be Chinese, your virtual relationships are with, soon 1.5 billion people or something like that. We're good at small face-to-face stuff. That's what we were made for. We know how to be responsible for children and parents and cousins and friends, but we now have to be responsible for fellow citizens, both of our country and fellow citizens of the world. And the question is, can we figure that out?
Anthony Appiah in the Toronto airport in front of Astra Taylor's camera in the new film Examined Life. Jack Beatty, he is surely right that the field for understanding life, understanding ourselves, has grown vastly larger, way beyond our own individual cultures. That changes the terms of trying to come to terms with the meaning of life if you want to do that.
It certainly does, and he's right, I think, to focus on the really ethical dead end of the family. I mean, we all love our families, we all take care of our families, but for so many of us, that's where the ethical stops. We discharge our duties to the people we love. And this larger question of our responsibility to the other, to the stranger, to the person we see in the news, read about in the newspaper, that can easily go by the boards. I think what he's really also saying is that globalization, which we think of as an economic and technological process, also should be a process of a globalizing of the conscience. Mm. We can't avoid knowing what we know, and yet we all act as if we don't know.
Let's hear from Philip in Petal, Mississippi, driving his big rig there. Truck driver Philip, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I was just riding along here with time to contemplate, and I think that's one of the problems that we have in this modern world that we live in, is that in order to contemplate philosophical thoughts, we have to have time to do that. And with the in a world where 40 hours of work is not enough anymore, if you're trying to get ahead for your family to do those things that we all feel like we need to do, it's 60, 70, 80 hours a week. And that just, you know, it doesn't leave time to think about things that really matter a lot of times.
You know, that is the thing I love about truck drivers. They're on the road and they are thinking, and we hear it again and again on this show. Philip, thanks for calling. Let's give everybody a little more to think about from Anthony Appiah, and I'll take that to Astra. But here he is, still in the airport, still thinking about that cosmopolitanism, how that person loves his or her fellow man differently from some other kinds of folks.
Cosmopolitans think that it's okay for people to be different. That they care about everybody, but not in a way that means they want everybody to be the same or like them. Whereas there's a certain kind of philosophical universalism, which is often associated with evangelizing religions, where, yeah, we love everybody, but we want them to become like us in order to love them properly. There's a great German proverb which says, Und willst du nicht mein Bruder sein, so schlage ich dir den Schädel ein. If you don't want to be my brother, I'll bash your skull in. And that's the opposite of cosmopolitanism. It's the university that says, yeah, I want you to be my brother, but on my terms.
Okay, thanks to Astra Taylor. We get a little German out there in the public square. They may not be out there that often, and through all that linguistic sophistication, we're talking about bashing the skull in. Wow, our truck driver Astra says, yes, please, but who has time? What do people tell you?
Well, I really appreciated that comment. I think it was very poignant and well made. I hope, though, that by showing philosophy in the streets, that one also gets the sense that every moment is an opportunity for philosophical reflection. Again, if you're going out to buy those shoes, every choice we make has philosophical implications. So perhaps it's not something that you need to set aside a bunch of time for and go into the library, though I do encourage people to read. I don't think you only need to see my movie, Examine Life.
Certainly don't have to be in the library. You make that very clear here on the shores of Lake Michigan, in the streets of San Francisco, in Midtown Manhattan.
Yes, philosophy is all around us, and opportunities abound for thinking about these basic issues. I mean, one thing I think that's interesting and that I tried to show in Examine Life is how sort of simple common sense ideas can have really radical, far-out consequences because we're living in a sort of globalized, interconnected world.
What example jumps out of that? What example would you point to?
Yeah, well, to use the classic Peter Singer's classic example, he talks about our shopping for shoes, and he gives a thought experiment. A lot of philosophers use these thought experiments to pose questions. And so he says, imagine that there's a shallow pond and that a child is drowning in the pond, but you're wearing a pair of very fancy shoes. Mm-hmm. Maybe they cost a few hundred dollars. Well, none of us would hesitate to jump into the pond and save the child, even if our $200 shoes were ruined. Mm. But if you extrapolate from that and think about the fact that, you know, every time you spend $200 or $50 or $20, you could be sending that money overseas and perhaps saving a life.
Mm-hmm.
This suddenly, our obligation grows immensely. Where do you draw the line? Where do our responsibilities end? So something that seems so simple, so obvious, actually has very deep implications for how we live our lives.
Yeah, that was a wonderful and difficult thought exercise to take on board because, of course, he's right. Every time we casually in our consumer society lay down that $100, $100 there, how does that compare with how that might be put to use elsewhere? It's hard to deal with what philosophers hand out sometimes. Let's get a call from New York City where your film's been showing. Pepe, you're on the air. Hi, Pepe.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Astra. I'm just wanting to know that I was actually in the audience for the very last showing at IFC where Cornel West and also Astra was in attendance.
Great.
And I just want to make a point on my favorite part of the film. It was Cornel West in the back of a taxi cab, and he was saying, oh, you know, philosophy is really just like jazz. It's spontaneous, freewheeling. It was kind of inspiring. And then my favorite part comes when he goes, And that's what I am. I'm just a blues man. I'm a jazz man. And I thought that was wonderful, like connection between the two, like between your examined life and also philosophy as a, you know, high holy grail. But really, it's really ingrained in all of our actions, our thoughts. I thought that was a very beautiful point.
Pepe, that's a great observation straight out of the audience. Cornel West really can riff. I've got just a little bit of that here. From the film, and we'll play it. He's in the back seat. The car's making its way through traffic. He's talking about how most people have been raised on romantic notions, he calls them, of wholeness and balance. But the world isn't really like that, he says. It's bits and pieces. And then, in his jazzy way, he starts to talk toward jazz and Charlie Parker. He says that's what a lot of modern writers and jazz and blues musicians have been trying to say.
This is where Chekhov begins. This is where the blues starts. That's where jazz starts. You think Charlie Parker's upset because he can't sustain a harmony? He doesn't care about the harmony. He's trying to completely ride on the dissonance, ride on the blue notes. Of course, he's got harmony in terms of its interventions here and there. But why start with this obsession with wholeness? And if you can't have it, then you're disappointed and want to have a drink and melancholia and blah, 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 blah. No, you see, the blues is personal catastrophe lyrically expressed.
Tattoo that on your arm. Jim in Hartford, Connecticut, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Tom. Hi, Astra.
Hi.
I found it fascinating, first of all, that Astra was inspired by Professor Singer at a young age and that she had this opportunity to interview him and make him part of her film. And I'd be interested in her making a comment about how that stayed with her throughout her life. And the second thing is I started out life as a philosophy and theology person, ended up becoming a lawyer, but be that as it may, when I was studying philosophy, one of the most interesting works that I read was written by a British philosopher called, whose name was Alfred North Whitehead. And Dr. Whitehead, who was a physicist and mathematician, tried to explain reality with all of the then-known concepts of science. But he started out his book, his preface to the book said, that I realize that my entire worldview is shaped by my own background, my Judeo-Christian background, my concept of history. And I thought, isn't that fascinating? Here's a man of this level of scientific intelligence, and what he is saying to us is, I perceive reality in a particular way, and it's shaped by my own worldview that I was raised with. And I would be interested in how Astra perceives that in relation to her movie.
Terrific. Jim, thanks for calling. Astra?
Oh, I thought that was such an interesting question because I'm really fascinated by the question of how our backgrounds inform our perception. And I think that's part of my project. Why bother showing philosophers on screen? Why not just do a radio show, for example? You know, and you would definitely get a sense of them that way. So you see, for example, Kwame Anthony Appiah, who, as we explained, is a Ghanaian British philosopher. So he talks about his unique experience of having grown up in a shantytown in Ghana and then translating that cultural experience into an Anglophone context. So you see that his sense of, you know, cultural communication and understanding cosmopolitanism is rooted in his autobiography. Later on, there's a scene with my sister, Sonora Taylor, in dialogue with Judith Butler.
Boy, is she
and
great.
You get,
your sister, I just fell in love with her. My goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very happy that she really rose to the occasion. And she talks about her experience as a disabled person and how that has informed her philosophy. And Judith Butler talks about being gay. So the biography is important here. And as far as my personal narrative.
Hold that thought, Astra. We've got to take a short break here, but we want to hear that. Biography, clearly important. And just to see the sweat on the brow of the philosopher as they're huffing through the park or down the street and trying to make it real in a very real setting. Astra Taylor's new film is Examined Life. Is it time for philosophers to bust out and say their piece in public? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking about a new film that catches philosophers on the hoof, on the street, in the backseat of a car, sharing their visions. It's called Examined Life. The filmmaker is Astra Taylor. She joins us today from San Francisco. Jack Beatty's here. She was just talking about her sister Sonora in the streets of San Francisco's Mission District with Judith Butler. Astra's your sister is got some severe disability. She's in a wheelchair, but such a wise and wonderful person here, talking with Judith Butler, who's done all kinds of queer theory and gender studies. And they make a wonderful couple on the streets of San Francisco, walking and talking and thinking. Here's a little bit of Judith Butler talking about society's notions of what the human body should look like. Let's listen.
I think gender and disability converge in a whole lot of different ways.
Yeah.
But one thing I think both movements do is get us to rethink what the body can do. And one of the things that I found in thinking about gender and even violence against sexual minorities or gender minorities, people whose gender presentation doesn't conform with standard ideals of femininity or masculinity, is that very often it comes down to, how people walk, how they use their hips, what they do with their body parts.
Astra Taylor, here we were talking about your personal biography. Here it gets very personal with your sister right in the middle of this, with her own experience and quite philosophical observations herself on addressing the world as a disabled person, and Judith Butler out of Berkeley. There they are, in the street, mixing it up just about as deep as you can get around identity and how the world understands, even our bodies.
Mm-hmm. I think what they're doing is quite relevant right now, because they're really questioning our culture's fixation on independence and this idea of sort of the self-made man. And I think, in this moment of this economic crisis, we're really seeing how interdependent we all are. So I think their comments have a larger resonance. But certainly, Sunny's embodiment has informed her whole worldview and her understanding of political and social issues.
Mm.
And what their sequence does, among other things, is that it questions the whole idea of the walk, of how we move through space. So all these philosophers up until their sequence have been walking around or, boating around, moving with a lot of ease. And suddenly she says, well, hey, not every environment is accessible to everyone. Let's think about that. Let's reflect on that.
Jack, the very word philosophy can sometimes sound archaic, but I was reminded in watching this of how you cannot live without a philosophy. We have one, whether we examine it or not, or we may have several working at the same time. I wonder if it brought back to you, Jack, just the simple importance of thinking about philosophy. We operate with one, whether we're conscious of it or not.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, St. Matthew says, walk according to the best light ye have, but be sure your light be not darkness. And I think that gets the twofer of philosophy. You got to walk according to the light you have, the philosophy you have, but the real philosophical critical dimension should be, is your light darkness? is what you think light really a form of darkness? Do you not need, on the one hand, to have a philosophy and also to have a critique of it?
You got philosopher Michael Hart of Duke University out on a rowboat in Central Park, Astra. He was recalling his youth when he'd headed to Central America to get involved with leftist revolutions, and then thinking as he's paddling or rowing around with you in the little pond there with that skyline of what, the Dakota where John Lennon died and other grand residences behind him, he's musing on how to give up his youth's romantic dreams and still be a revolutionary.
The relevant fact for politics is really that human nature is changeable. Human nature isn't good or evil. Human nature is the history of habits and practices that are the result of past struggles, of past hierarchies, of past victories and defeats. And so this is, I think, actually the key to rethinking revolution, is to recognize that revolution is not just about a transformation for democracy. Revolution really requires a transformation of human nature so that people are capable of democracy.
And we row on in Central Park with Astra, and Michael Hart begins to think more out loud about what democracy has come to these days.
Democracy is one of those concepts that seems to me has been almost completely corrupted today. In some cases, it's used to mean simply periodic elections with a limited choice of rulers. In other cases, when one thinks especially in international affairs, it often means following the will of the United States. But really, democracy means the rule of all by all. It means everybody involved in collective self-rule.
You have him talking revolution in a rowboat, Astra. That was kind of impish on your part. Was that intended? It looks so sort of serene and, you know, paddle in the park. Hardly like a revolutionary setting.
Well, and that the environment is supposed to be sort of a second character in all of these sequences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it's illustrative and sometimes it provides a counterpoint. You know, how can we talk about revolution or just changing, you know, society amidst all these symbols of the stability of wealth and power? That's a pretty ambitious enterprise. So in every sequence, I tried to use the environment not just as a passive backdrop, but as something that would also provoke insights or ideas or maybe just trip us up and interrupt us.
Let's get a call from Celeste in Rye, New York. Celeste, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been recently reading Ortega and Gasset, and I ran across this line: life is, in itself and forever, shipwreck. And the consciousness of shipwreck being the truth of life constitutes salvation. And I thought that was really really applied to what Cornel West said about jazz being a personal life that was a disaster made music. Is that what you said?
Something like that, yeah. Yeah.
Very good paraphrase. That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. The lyrical manifestation of catastrophe or something like that. That's a wonderful line from Ortega y Gasset as well. Jack, this theme of things being kind of out of control, and nevertheless, we accept, we look for ways to get along, to build our little craft out of the shipwreck, seem to run through an awful lot of these philosophers' observations today.
Yes, and we're going to come to Mr. Zizek, is that how you say it?
Zizek, yeah.
Yes, who takes this theme of catastrophe another step, it seems to me, to its logical culmination.
We'll get right to that. We've got listeners online at the website On Point Radio commenting here. One, Sabato says, let's not assume that philosophers are all benign social workers. They are not. Some of the best ones have been in love with totalitarian dictators, have supported anti-Semitism, have been misogynists. He goes on through, you know, thinking about Nietzsche and Heidegger, and he's got his problems with Foucault. He's got some of his own problems with Slavoj Žižek, who you talked to. Then we've got another here, back and forth. Phil, Augustine lived way before the Crusades and way before the Catholic Church became the monolithic part, became during the Middle Ages. Hence, your argument is specious. You've got listeners off and thinking here. Introduce us to Slavoj Žižek, if you would, Astra.
Slavoj Žižek is a philosopher from Slovenia, which is the part of ex-Yugoslavia. And he is famous for combining psychoanalysis, which, of course, seems, you know, focuses on the personal experience, the subjective, and the social. So combining and looking at the way sort of capitalism or contemporary society works on the individual and collective imagination. Mm-hmm. So he sort of does psychoanalysis on culture.
And you film him standing in a garbage dump in, where is it, London?
It is. It's a garbage depot in London. And, you know, there was this theme of catastrophe, as you all have pointed out, and mm-hmm. trying to sort of make sense of the mess that we're in. And what would be a better spot then right there in front of the steaming pile of trash.
And I mean, you can just about smell it in the film. It's dripping. There's junk all over the place.
It
was pretty gross. it looked as though it was. But here's Žižek, and he's no friend of environmentalists. He calls them ecologists who kind of romanticize nature. He says nature is a big series of unimaginable catastrophes. Let's let him put it in his own words.
This notion of nature as harmonious, organic, balanced, reproducing, almost living organism, which is then disturbed, perturbed, derailed through human hubris, technological exploitation, and so on, is, I think, a secular version of the religious story of the fall. And the answer should be not that there is no fall, that we are part of nature, but on the contrary, that there is no nature. Nature is not a balanced totality which then we humans disturb. Nature is a big series of unimaginable catastrophes. We profit from them. What is our main source of energy today? Oil. What are we aware? What is oil? Oil reserves beneath the earth are material remainders of an unimaginable catastrophe.
Here we are standing in a garbage dump in London, and philosopher Zizek saying, Jack, we should cut off even more our roots in nature. We need more alienation. We need more artificial. Okay.
Yes, and I hear a little Marxism here. Maybe I'm wrong, but he seems to
you
be saying...
Right.
Yeah, he seems to be saying it's the social, that's the great realm, and our job is not to accept nature, but to transform it into the social, into, you know, not to, for example, to accept the inequalities that are just built into nature, but to transform them and transcend them in society.
Well, I felt like a benighted romantic by his assessment there, Rob. Rob in Salem, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Rob.
Thanks for having a great discussion.
Yeah, good. What do you know?
Listen, I'm a huge fan of Zizek, and I saw Astra's first film, which is just called Zizek.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen this one yet, but I look forward to doing that. What I wanted to say is I actually consider myself a conservative, and I have profound sort of political disagreements with Zizek.
Mm.
But what I still appreciate him for is this sort of constant insistence that, you know, philosophy in the Enlightenment tradition has to come back, that, you know, the role of philosophy is to insist on a search for universal truth. And even though I don't agree with the universal truth that he necessarily reaches by way of, you know, Hegel and Lacan, I still really, just the insistence on that search is really valuable. And I was wondering if Astra could address that.
Astra?
Yeah, I also feel sort of a kinship with his comments in that, you know, you don't necessarily agree with everything Zizek says, but there's something valuable in his enterprise. And, you know, that's sort of my attitude towards all of these thinkers. There's a conversation that needs to be had about how to live and what's our relationship to the natural world. What could our relationship be? So, I might not think that reinvigorating the Enlightenment tradition is precisely the way to go, but I'm happy for Zizek to be arguing that that's the case, and I'm happy for someone else to come along and argue the opposite.
Love him or hate him, he makes you think, standing in that dump in London saying that loving trash, not idealizing nature, is the true love of the world. He calls environmentalists the new conservatives here, Rob, to your characterization, ecology, which he sort of seems to use almost interchangeably with environmentalism or love of nature. Well, here's what he has to say, a little bit more from Zizek in the dump.
Ecology will slowly turn maybe into a new opium of the masses, the way, as we all know, Marx defined religion. What we expect from religion is a kind of an unquestionable highest authority. It's got work, so it is, you don't debate it. Today, I claim ecology is more and more taking over this role of a conservative ideology. Whenever there is a new scientific breakthrough, biogenetic development, whatever, it is as if the voice which warns us not to trespass, violate a certain invisible limit, like don't do that, it would be too much. That voice is today more and more the voice of ecology.
The voice of ecology, Jack, is a new conservatism. What do you say, sir?
Well, now, that really does stand things on its head, doesn't it, for us? I mean,
yeah.
We tend to think of ecology as progressive and so on. And yet what he's saying here is that this is the whole ecological catastrophist theme is at variance with the Western theme, isn't it, of questing and Promethean man and all the rest. And it's much more like Atlas bearing our burdens. And he's saying, I don't want to bear those burdens, and I don't want to bow down before this, ecology. And I see what he's saying there, that it can itself seem to, and, you know, ecologists can talk about us as if we're sort of, inconveniences on the planet. The planet would be doing right fine if we weren't around to mess it up.
Astra, did you find yourself moved on down the road of insight in the process of doing all these? And did you leave a whole lot on the floor to cut them down to something that would work in a film, not between the, you know, covers of a tome?
Oh, I did. These people like to speak.
Yes.
So I had about 40 hours of footage, actually. And, you know, some of that, of course, was just the environment. But a lot of material that couldn't make it into the finished project. And so I'm actually publishing a companion book with all the edited transcripts that have been reworked, you know, for another format. So that will be out in July from the New Press. And in the book, you get, you know, a deeper sense of where these people are coming from and the overlaps and the points of disagreement and all of that. But, you know, what did this project reveal to me? Well, in a way, it's the inconsistencies of my own worldview. So, you know, when we're talking about, you know, reflecting on your own preconceptions, mm-hmm. your own ideologies and sort of assumptions about the world, you know, I'm looking inwards and seeing that all of the things I believe in don't necessarily fit together in a totally coherent philosophy.
And that, I guess, is okay. Cornel West says, why start with this obsession with wholeness? Take the fragmentary nature of the world, he says as he's saying goodbye to you, then steps out of the car into a crosswalk in Manhattan as evening descends, and he, in his media, immediately recognized by somebody in that crosswalk, and he's off the talking, almost glad-handing philosopher out on the streets. Perfect ending for you there, Esther.
Yep, he goes off into the night to continue his walking and talking.
Walking and talking with philosophers. Astra Taylor's new film is Examined Life, a film like a few others, I would say, that I've seen recently. It's just wonderful. Astra, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thanks so much for having me, and thank you, Jack.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Jack, thanks a lot for joining in, and keep thinking. I guess we all will.
Try. All right, thank you.
Thanks. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.